Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Tuesday, October 18th. Today, we are speaking with the Sun's rural affairs reporter, Shannon Najmabadi, about water quality problems in the small town of Colorado City. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our friends and sponsors at Forvis. Forvis is an accounting and advisory services firm that offers comprehensive assurance, tax, and advisory services to various industries. Created by the merger of equals of BKD and DHG, Forvis now ranks among the nation's top 10 professional services firms. To learn more about how Forvis can help your organization manage change, stay compliant, and bolster your bottom line, visit their website at forvis.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. Beer represents an essential aspect of Colorado's international reputation. In addition to the long-lived Coors, the historic Tivoli and Sangs, and other brands, an ever-increasing number of microbreweries have helped quench the state's demand for brews of all stripes. The Wynkoop Brewing Company, which opened its doors on this day in 1988, set the stage for the fermented revolution. Like many others, John W. Hickenlooper and Jerry and Martha Williams hoped to cash in on Colorado's oil shale boom in the late 1970s and early 1980s. Their dreams evaporated when the industry collapsed in 1982. With their severance pay as seed money, they raised nearly $1 million to renovate a stone and brick warehouse in Denver's Lodo District, then a rundown neighborhood. Attempting such a venture in a long-neglected area seemed risky to many, but following its 1988 grand opening, the Wynkoop Brewing Company proved a success for its owners and the start of a major change in Lodo. Other brew pubs and businesses opened in the area, which blossomed after Coors Field debuted in 1995. The economic renaissance combined modern tastes with historic preservation, which in turn inspired similar restoration and new construction in many older Denver neighborhoods. Wynkoop convinced investors that the past and present could combine to create a promising future. Hickenlooper parlayed his success into politics, drawing on his reputation and folksy image to win election as Denver's mayor in 2003 and 2007. He captured the governor's office in 2010 and 2014 and took a run at the Democratic nomination for president leading up to the 2020 election before winning a Colorado Senate seat in 2020. Before we continue, the Colorado Sun has created a 2022 voter guide to help you navigate filling out your ballot. The guide has information on ballot measures, when the debates are being held, breakdowns of campaign finances, the latest on election news, and much more. Visit coloradosun.com/vote to check it out. Now our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sunup Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you. Today, we are visiting with the Sun's rural affairs reporter, Shannon Najmabadi. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Well, thanks for coming back. Shannon, you've got this phenomenal story that ran on the Colorado Sun's website, coloradosun.com, Monday. And it is about some residents of a southern Colorado town called Colorado City that are having tremendous problems with their tap water. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about Colorado City and what is going on with their water lines.
Well, it's a really interesting situation. Colorado City is an unincorporated community, kind of by Pueblo, about 25 miles southwest of Pueblo. And residents in this area have seemingly for years, maybe even decades, had these problems with their tap water. And these problems are that it comes out smelly, like has a pond or swampy smell. It sometimes has a color like being brown or yellow. And they've just kind of associated it with not being clean. So for example, it will kill the houseplants, they say, or it leaves their laundry dirty when they wash something with the, you know, water that's connected to their washing machine. They say that they get these notices that show that the levels of two potential carcinogens, and bear with me, these are long words, but the abbreviations are TTHMs and HAA5s. The residents get notices that these potential carcinogens in their tap water are too high. They get those notices fairly frequently. And if you look at, you know, annual reports that the water district puts out, you can see that those contaminant levels were too high in at least 2014, 2015, 2017, 2018, and 2021. And these are disinfectant byproducts, essentially. And if you want the full name, they are total trihalomethanes or haloacetic acids.
And Shannon, who is sending these notices to the residents of Colorado City?
That's a good question. The federal EPA sets the levels of how high these kinds of disinfectant byproducts can be in water. And the district is obligated under state regulations to send their members these notices when it exceeds the federal standard. And just to be clear, the way these disinfectant byproducts come around is when, you know, certain material in water mixes with chlorine or other disinfecting agents, and the potential health risks associated with them are pretty low. You know, the EPA puts in quite a bit of a cushion, but the potential health risks are, you know, big. They could cause cancer or other problems.
Right. And if folks are noticing that it is killing their houseplants, they are probably reticent to consume it or to feed it to their pets or put it on their gardens and that sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I should say, you know, the district manager says that his houseplants have survived with this type of water, that, you know, it's totally safe to drink. And experts, again, like I said before, note that these kinds of disinfectant byproduct levels, even if you exceed the maximum set by the federal government, there is a bit of a cushion. You know, it's like one in a small number of people would develop problems over a long period of time of consuming these excessive levels. But that said, of course, when you have the smell issues, the color issues, these notices coming, of course, residents have safety concerns. And a lot of them, some of them have had gut issues or had pets develop health problems, and they attribute it to the water.
Mm-hmm. So this has been going on, as you noted, for quite a few years. Do they boil the water? Does that make a difference? What are the remedies that are being recommended right now, or just changing water pipes, changing the source?
Yeah, that's a great question. Residents have really taken some very elaborate steps to try to get their water into a state that they think is drinkable. You know, I talked to one woman who puts basically 5 gallons of water on to boil, lets it cool, pours it batch by batch through a small half-gallon filter, and then puts it into this whole assortment of glass jugs and pitchers in her fridge. Others buy bottled water. They get huge water jugs. They've put in expensive filtration systems. They've done all these kinds of different things to try to get the water to come out either without that smell or color, or you know, they'll buy these home testing kits that test for total dissolved solids in the water, and they'll run their own tests at home to see when they think it's safe.
And is there a pattern to it? Does it ebb and flow during different times of the year?
I think that there are a lot of problems with the system. You know, something we haven't mentioned is that, like a lot of small systems in Colorado and nationwide, it's aging, it's decades old. There's sediment and rust and things like that in the pipes. So those obviously contribute to the discoloration issues and are generally not great. But yeah, they have a seasonal algae bloom situation that does cause increases in the odor and taste problems, it seems. And just if you want to take a step back and kind of talk about what is actually causing the issue, it's basically that they have these membranes, which I think of as kind of a filter. The water goes through those filters and then it gets mixed with the disinfecting agents. But because they don't have any kind of pre-treatment process before the water gets to a filter, there's a whole lot of stuff that's banging up against the filter. You know, you have bits of algae and other organic matter. And so the algae can clog up the membranes. And then there's still some materials that are getting through. And when those organic materials get through, those are the things that react with the disinfecting agents.
Right. And you report that the district has begun to fix tanks and water lines using $3.7 million in federal relief funding and hopes to put in a pre-treatment system for about $4 million to also repair a nearby dam. When is some of that work expected to be underway or start to remedy this problem?
It's been a long process. The district got a new district manager a couple of years ago, and he basically said it's been a constant stream of projects since he came along. They have secured some funding to fix the tanks and water lines, but they're also looking for funding, not just for that pre-treatment system, but for a bunch of other things that they would like to do to improve the system. And so it could be quite a long process. You know, I don't think that people can expect it to be a quick fix. And one of the board members we spoke to did say that, you know, time and money are big issues here to moving forward, even if they are serious about making improvements, which you said they are. So I'm not sure the exact timeline. I would imagine that it will be lengthy, not a matter of days.
Right, right. And then this the storage dam called Beckwith Dam, I believe, you report that it has so many cracks and problems with the dam itself that the state had to reduce the level of water in that dam. Does the problems with the dam present a safety problem to surrounding communities?
So the Beckwith Reservoir is a high hazard dam, which based on the way they define that, it basically means that if that dam failed, it could result in loss of life. So yes, in that sense, it does pose a danger. But, you know, we've been talking about water quality issues, you know, the color and the smell and things like that. But this is more of a quantity issue almost. It's that the district has the ability to store 16 vertical feet of water. There's about, what you know, 1 foot is basically 70 acre feet. So it's quite a bit of water. Mm-hmm. But the dam has these problems going back to at least 2011, including, like you said, the cracks, and there are a number of other issues. And because of those problems, the state has basically taken away the district's ability to store as much water as it can. So it took away 70 acre feet last year. It almost took away more this year. But because district officials said they were working to make the needed repairs, the state put that restriction on hold. So this is a whole separate issue that's happening in tandem to the water quality issues. And that is that they have this other project that needs fixing, this dam, which needs shoring up. And that can affect how much water the district is able to store.
Sure. So we have the multiple issues affecting this small community. And so their dam, their filtering system, their water tanks, the storage system, the pipes, and it is not, unfortunately, uncommon, like you referenced earlier, with smaller communities all over the country. And so what is, as you said, this is going to take several years, but what is the actual next step in Colorado City and for the board?
The next steps are really to secure funding and to move forward with the needed repairs. And it's a situation that Colorado City really isn't alone in. About 98% of the state's public water and wastewater systems do serve communities that are pretty small, fewer than 10,000 people. So it's something that probably a lot of different water districts or water systems are going to be needing to do as they move forward, which is, you know, look at replacing aging infrastructure, finding the funding to be able to do it, finding qualified, you know, engineers or other technicians who can take on these repairs and go forward from there and get ready to make the next round of repairs in, you know, another 50 years or so.
Yeah, exactly. Shannon, how did you learn about this story?
Well, we did a story a couple of months ago at this point, I believe, down in Colorado City about a very screwy mail system they have. They've had a bunch of contracted post offices and a series of contractors who quit, citing really, really tough working conditions that they were placed under by USPS. And when I was there, many residents were mentioning this problem with the water. And it took a while to kind of figure out exactly what was going on. But we ended up coming back a couple of months later and trying to report what we learned.
Well, thank you for sharing it with us and with our listeners and our readers. Again, the story is at coloradosun.com, and I really appreciate you walking us through it today, Shannon. And if anybody has thoughts or questions about the Daily Sun Up podcast, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And thanks to Shannon and everybody who helped produce today's podcast, including our production partners, Pirate Audio. Have a wonderful day, and I sincerely hope that you can join us for the next episode of the Daily Sun Up.
Read more on this story at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. The Denver metro area's inflation rate remains high, and in September it was up 7.7% compared to last year. Nationwide, consumer prices were up 8.2% in the past year. According to the Consumer Price Index, published late last week, the rate that prices are going up is slowing and was down 0.2% in the Denver area compared with June and July. Food was up nearly 1% and rent up almost 3%, but gasoline prices were down 22%. The most recent fundraising and spending report shows Colorado Democratic candidates and groups are leading the campaign cash race. Saturday was the deadline for political action committees and candidates to report their quarterly numbers, and it indicates where they stand heading into the final weeks of the November 8th election. At the head of the pack is Adam Frisch, who is challenging Representative Lauren Boebert in the 3rd Congressional District. Frisch raised $1.7 million from July 1st to September 30th, which is the most of any Colorado U.S. House candidate. Republican State Board of Education member Steve Durham is pushing for Colorado's academic standards to connect the Holocaust and other genocides to socialism. Historians say Durham is wrong. According to a University of Colorado history professor who studies German politics, the idea that Nazis were socialists is a lie, and that narrative is completely wrong. Still, Durham has exerted outsized influence over the standards related to genocide, which are meant to guide teaching across Colorado. A key section, largely written by Durham, overrides recommendations from a committee of teachers and experts. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again tomorrow. The Colorado Sun is nonpartisan and completely independent. We're always dedicated to telling the in-depth stories we need today more than ever. And the Sun is supported by readers and listeners like you. Right now, you can head to coloradosun.com and become a member, starting at $5 per month. And if you bump it up to $20 per month, you'll get access to our politics newsletter, The Unaffiliated, as well as our outdoors newsletter, The Outsider, and our new health and environment newsletter, The Temperature. All three exclusive newsletters delivered to your inbox every week.